And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, I was going to do a live show tonight, but there's so many demands on my time, I'm going to have to do another pre-recorded show and then try to do a live show tomorrow. Now, it's interesting. Everybody who gets elected is suddenly an expert in international affairs. And the clown show is moving into other regions. Pelosi now wants to control when and if we go to war. Because, of course, she's so much smarter than everybody else. The assassination of the Iranian general has the left just absolutely going out of its tiny little mind. You have to kind of wonder. I mean, Rose McGowan, who, as I understand it, barely got through high school, is an international affairs expert. And she has apologized to the Iranian people on behalf of this country. Now, I don't know who died and made her God, but apparently she does. Well, we're going to talk about a topic that I got an email about. There's been rumors for a number of years that there is a secret space program. And I was asked what I thought about it. Now, of course, we've had strange lights and configurations seen in the sky throughout the ages. Been seen in our skies. They've been seen on the moon. I mean, I wrote a book about 400 years of lights and movement and buildings seen on the moon. There have been a number of well-known astronomers thought they saw life on Mars, both with the naked eye and through their telescopes. And there are all sorts of anomalies when we talk about space and the other planets. But do these celestial bodies, which we're more familiar than other heavenly bodies, I guess you could say, do they have actual cities and bases? Astronomers, both professional and amateur, have gathered a great deal of evidence that confirm for us the possibility that there is someone up there, and in all likelihood, watching us, and they've been doing it for eons. So what we want to know is, who's responsible for these cosmic shenanigans that have us scratching our head when we look up at the universe, and there would indeed seem to be bases, ancient cities, all sorts of weird artifacts on the moon and on the Martian surface. But the question becomes, who put them there? And were they left behind recently, or are they ancient? Now, the unexplained aerial activity all around us would seem to indicate there's an ongoing operation. You know, someone else is sharing the same space we are and utilizing advanced technology to fly around overhead and also utilize the surface of the moon and Mars. You know, from the sighting of giant boomerangs and triangular shaped objects, it would seem that there's a secret space program going on, operated by some kind of consortium or cabal who's heading up a worldwide surveillance program. You know, the fact that somebody's flying around with equipment our government denies having access to is interesting. You know, our government's supposed to have complete control over the sovereign space over our nation. That was one of the issues that led to all the cover-ups of Roswell. We're the most powerful country in the world, and we couldn't control who was flying in our airspace. Now, the evidence as to who is responsible is somewhat, I guess, distance a good word, and we can only speculate. You know, one would think that extraterrestrials might be the ones responsible for leaving behind evidence of their having camped out in our solar system. We do know that no country here on Earth has constructed a face on Mars or a bridge across 20 miles of the lunar surface at an altitude of 5 miles. After all, NASA has not done a stellar job of keeping their own minimal space program on track, so it would look like we have to focus our attention someplace else for those who might be to blame for this unusual behavior. Now, there are some who assert the Nazis developed a radically different form of space travel and jumped off into space during the final days of World War II. They're supposed to have established headquarters on the moon and even on Mars. There was a movie, Iron Sky, that touted this theme, which was released worldwide in 2012 in a sort of modernized version of Dr. Strangelove, but I mean, even its supporters had to agree that it had a somewhat wacky theme to it. And of course, the former Soviet Empire has been accused of every misdeed, so why not usurping our right to control our airspace in the case of the mysterious triangles that seem to be associated with this invisible or secret space program? In all honesty, the Soviets would seem to be down really low on the credibility scale as villains in this scenario. And equally as strange is the suspicion that one or more secret societies is behind this. Secret societies of which we have very little information. There are those who we quote, who say the Freemasons have known about ET's behavior patterns for a long time, since their occult wisdom would include the notion that other entities abound alongside us on an invisible plane, even if society refuses to acknowledge their existence. Now, there's proof that numerous American astronauts are high initiates of this mystical order, whom some see as having connections to the dark side. Apparently, these space travelers have even carried with them symbols of the Masonic organization and placed them on the moon as a symbol of their divine authority, if you will, over mankind. Other secret societies may also be responsible for this secondary space program. Nikola Tesla may have shared his knowledge of crossing space and time with a group of inventors as long as 100 years ago, giving them the drop on our own space program. And if we read matters correctly, they've decided to keep their distance and not let us in on their unincorporated franchise, for lack of a better term. One of the most interesting theories is that there's a breakaway civilization, a shadowy domain that coexists alongside our own world, but keeps to itself in order to either avoid conflict or determine its own destiny. It could be a physical, materialistic civilization or something more fringe, such as a less dense society that exists outside our own dimensions in another realm with which we have no contact. So what we've determined is that there might be men walking around on the moon and or Mars, and you'll have to decide who rules the roost. Who's behind it? Is it them or some kind of undeclared us? Or maybe it's a collaboration of both parties. I feel comfortable going behind the backs of the average citizen and keeping this all so hush-hush as to seem like a dream or a nightmare of untold proportions. Before his death, the father of the stealth bomber and head of the Lockheed Skunk Works shocked everybody when he confessed the military and the private sector had been flying vehicles that mimic alien craft. The article was written by Tom Keeler, an aerospace engineer who's worked as a computer systems analyst for NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. According to Keeler's article, inside the Skunk Works, which is Lockheed's secret research and development entity, we were a small, intensely cohesive group consisting of about 50 engineers and designers and 100 or so expert machinists and shop workers. Their forte, he said, was building technologically advanced airplanes of small number and of high class for what he described as highly secret missions. He said, we already have the means to travel among the stars, but these technologies are locked up in black projects, and it would take an act of God to ever get them out to benefit humanity. Anything you can imagine, we already know how to do, he said. He also said, we now have the technology to take E.T. home, and it won't take somebody's lifetime to do that. There's an error in the equations. We know what it is. We now have the capability to travel to the stars, he said. First, you have to understand, we won't get to the stars using chemical propulsion. Second, we have to devise a new propulsion technology. And we have to find out where and how Einstein went wrong. The question was asked how UFO propulsion worked, he said, let me ask you, how does ESP work? And it was responded, all points in time and space are connected. And his response was, well, that's how it all works. One way or the other, the cat's out of the bag. So now the question is, who is the cat? Well, a well-known figure in the UFO community, Richard Dolan, has written a lot. In a field crowded by overzealous believers and fringe contactees and those whose ego is so massive that they can't see anybody but their own ideas, Dolan has firmly established a reputation as a researcher and author who relies primarily on public and proven sources. Well, these sources whose backgrounds can be verified in real-world terms. He's written two very influential books on the government cover-up of the UFO phenomena, UFOs and National State Security, Volumes 1 and 2, that provide thorough research into the history of the clandestine black budget response of the U.S. military and the intelligence community to the alien presence. When he was asked, why should we believe in a secret space program? He said there are a couple of reasons. First, there are a number of anomalous events we know have occurred in Earth orbit and beyond Earth orbit. And these alone aren't proof of a secret space program, but it is evidence. We got 40 years of events recorded by U.S. and Soviet astronauts of objects in orbit that appeared to be not our own and it seemed to move intelligently. We've got them going back all the way to 1960s. And there are some very excellent Soviet cosmonaut reports from the 80s. We have the evidence of what's known as DSP satellites. That's Defense Support Program satellites. These are a series of geosynchronous satellites in Earth orbit that have a long record of tracking fast walkers in space. That is, objects that are like a space UFO, so to speak. From the 1973 period to 1991, he said there were, if I'm not mistaken, 281 such anomalous events recorded by the DSP satellites. Now, I'm not saying that every one of these recorded anomalous events are extraterrestrial craft, but a number of them are really bizarre. For example, one that took place around 1984, recorded by satellite, showed an object that approached within a certain very close range and then moved away. In fact, it approached from a point in deep space and then moved on. According to Dolan, we got this information almost as an accident. A friend of Dolan's who worked for many years at an aerospace company received mistakenly, but not illegally, a printout of some DSP fast walker events. He said, my point is this. You got these events and quite a few others that are intriguing, which tells us there's something going on in Earth's orbit that's not being officially explained. Seemed to me very logical that just as there'd be a covert monitoring of the UFO phenomena within Earth's atmosphere and on the ground and so forth, if there were anomalous activities going on in space, then clearly you'd want an agency to monitor that as well, to deal with it, so to speak. And that would necessitate the creation of a very clandestine component to the U.S. space program. Secondly, he said there's also been a good history, although not an airtight history, of leaks from within the military world. One former Air Force NCO, stated that he had the opportunity to review NASA images of the far side of the moon. Images that Dolan said are normally airbrushed to conceal artificial structures not deemed suitable for release to the public. Now, you get the claim quite a few times of NASA airbrushing and doctoring their moon photos. Again, these are claims, but I look at a number of these claims and they strike me as sincere individuals, and frankly, I have no reason to doubt what they're saying. And there have been at least three or four specific individuals who made these claims about NASA airbrushing their images. So that makes me think there is funny business going on. They're hiding something important about space. Another of Dolan's sources told Dolan he'd been assigned to train remote viewers at Fort Meade, Maryland, to scan the dark side of the moon, presumably looking for evidence of an alien presence there. And Dolan says he feels the U.S. military must have a good reason for pursuing that line of investigation and their capabilities in regard to space that our military has, which they're not discussing with the rest of us. Now, a couple of points of clarification. Remote viewing is a program that the U.S. government has worked on since, I think the earliest I read about it was in the 70s. And that's where you take someone who has demonstrated psychic ability, you give them a grid coordinate, and have them just describe what they see in their mind's eye being at that location. Now, some, frankly, couldn't find their rear with both hands and a flashlight. But the others have been very, very accurate in what they've reported. Now, he was questioned what he thought about the situation with Mars. And he said, "My own thoughts on Mars are this. I've become persuaded over the years there are things on Mars that seem anomalous to me, that do seem artificial. There are claims by people who are alleged insiders who've gone to Mars and so forth, and I don't give these claims a lot of credit. Until they're able to prove something that actually sounds rational or is backed by evidence, you just can't take it seriously." Having said that, though, it does make perfect sense when you look at the history of apparent UFO crashes and recoveries. And there are a number I think they're a good case for. You have to assume that national security apparatus isn't going to be sitting on their hands looking at this technology. They're going to reverse engineer it. They're going to study it and try to duplicate it. So that allows 40 to 50 years, according to Dolan, with a lot of black budget money and a lot of secrecy in which a classified reverse engineering group could work. And if you had any level of success at all with it, it's not something you would share with the world. But it would be something that would come in handy for covert missions beyond Earth's orbit. For example, a secret space program. Now, he says he's spoken to people he considers credible who affirm there's a secret program connected with the moon. Now, concerning Mars, he says he's never gotten anything that would allow him to say confidentially or confidently one way or the other, but he said he wouldn't be shocked to learn we'd travel to Mars. Every conclusion in science is provisional and contingent upon more information coming your way. Now, one of the ideas he's been kicking around for the last few years is that of a breakaway civilization. He thinks this is something that's real. Now, his theory is it originated really in post-World War II society. But there's nothing preventing such a thing from having happened earlier. There was a story of Marconi having established a colony in South America to do secret research on radio wave propagation. The basic idea of the breakaway civilization is simple. You've got a secret group, a classified group of people with access to radically advanced technology, radically advanced science, and they just don't share it with the rest of the world. One scientific breakthrough leads to another, and that leads to another, and so on. And next thing you know, you've got a separate group of humanity that's vastly far beyond the rest of the world. And that's not necessarily a far-fetched notion. In our own official world history, you go back 200 years and compare levels of technology from Europe to, say, Central Africa, and you're talking about two vastly different ways of understanding the world. So really, what's the difficulty in understanding that the classified secret scientific community would make radical breakthroughs that they wouldn't share with everybody else? He didn't think it was outrageous, and he does think it's happened since World War II. Now, one of the breakthroughs they've made is in what they'd call anti-gravity technology. And could this have happened in the 19th century? Well, in theory, that's not impossible. Dolan said he speculated privately many times whether there's been a secret breakaway group going back to ancient times. When you look at some of the really puzzling mysteries of the ancient world, whether it's the Great Pyramid of Giza or Machu Picchu, there are elements of these and other architectural sites that have been left behind that, to him at least, don't make a whole lot of sense in the context of human society as it then was supposed to have existed. I mean, the Great Pyramid doesn't make sense to him in terms of 2,500 years ago, ancient Egyptian culture could build something like that. He wondered if there was a human construct at the time, and what human civilization are we talking about? So he leaves open the possibility that some great secret would be understood by a very small elect group of people, and they'd want to hide it from the rest of the world for obvious reasons. Now, when he was asked where the Nazis fit into this picture, he said, when I first started in the business, certainly had a very poor appreciation of just how sophisticated the research was in this field. And he's come to a very different opinion now. He said the Nazis were quite sophisticated in their science of what we call flying saucer technology. And this has become more clear as time has gone on. But there's a problem with that theory. He doesn't think one can state the case that the Nazis explained the entire UFO phenomena. Not even close. He said he had visited the Canadian National Archives in Ottawa to review Canadian UFO reports and came across a story written by an elderly man in the 1980s who wrote about his experience in the Northwest Territory during aerial mapping for the Canadian government in 1936. According to Dolan, the man had a perfect, crystal clear sighting of the most beautiful aerial object he'd ever seen. It was oblong, a little longer than it was wide, and it took off and within 2 seconds was at the horizon. Never at any point made a sound. Now that was a typical, even classic, UFO sighting. But Dolan stressed when it occurred. It is true in 1936 the Nazis were in power. But it's also true in 1936 their science in this field was still in its bare infancy, as far as anybody could tell. So if you assume this story is true, in 1936 you got a perfectly functioning, incredible UFO in the middle of nowhere in northern Canada doing something. So what was it doing there? People who argue that UFOs are strictly Nazi technology need to do a little more research into the phenomena itself. It goes much further back than the 1930s. It's either a very, very clandestine human intelligence that exists as a long-standing secret society, or we're dealing with non-humans that are interacting with planet Earth. The latter theory is probably more likely. But there certainly is a clandestine human power structure involved in the mystery. I mean, you can't dispute that. But there are too many witness claims and descriptions of non-human entities. And they're not all faked or screen memories. People are actually seeing entities that are not human. So you have to ask yourself, who is running this operation? At least the human part of it. It's certainly not the president of the United States. It's obvious there's a power structure behind every president. You look at every president for the last 50 years, and really every one of them got into office because one man named David Rockefeller nodded his head and said, yes, that man's going in. I mean, Rockefeller was instrumental behind Gerald Ford. He ends the big new Brzezinski, practically, literally lifted Jimmy Carter from Georgia and put him in the White House. And Rockefeller was very powerful and prominent in the Reagan administration. He was essentially the political grandfather of George Herbert Walker Bush. And Bush was a protege of Kissinger, and Kissinger worked for Rockefeller. Clinton was very much desired by the Rockefeller people. Clinton attended his first Bilderberger meeting in 1991, the year before he got the Democratic nomination. Not an accident. And who was one of Obama's senior advisors? Brzezinski. So you got Rockefeller involved in the administrations of a number of presidents. So all these presidents are backed, not just by Rockefeller, you know, obviously in his mid to late 90s, but a clique of financial power that surrounds him. And that's the center of real power in the world today. And the idea is, just as global financial interests are the dominant force behind U.S. foreign policy and U.S. financial policy, they're probably the dominant players in managing UFO technology and the secret space program. The problem is proving it. The most tangible thing Dolan feels he can point to is that special access programs, the black budget programs in the U.S., all indicate a preponderance of private power as opposed to public power. In other words, the U.S. Department of Defense personnel do not appear to be the key players in these special access programs. As private contractors like Boeing or Lockheed or General Electric, they really run the show. And what we have is, at the classified level, private money that is more likely calling the shots. And that's how the government has operated for over 100 years, and it makes sense that the UFO technology issue would become privatized at some point. And the secret clandestine space program would also, to a large extent, be privatized. Certainly would help with secrecy. It's easier to have something proprietary instead of merely classified if you want to keep it secret, and a lot of this has gone into the private hands. And while government institutions may still have their hands involved in the program, the technology and knowledge, it's truly important, it's outside the public realm and it's outside the public purview. So you have to ask yourself, is NASA part of the cover-up? Well, there's a lot of people that feel that NASA's a front for something that's much more profound going on behind the scenes. Now, the U.S. is never, ever going to relinquish its dominance of space as a platform of operations. After all, it's the domination of space that enables U.S. military to dominate theaters of war. Without dominating space, the U.S. military isn't any better than the military of a lot of other nations. But because we dominate space with satellite technology, that's how we allow stealth fighters and bombers to get the exact information they need that enables them to do precision targeting and precision bombing and other activities. Demilitarization of space is an absolute necessity from a national security perspective. And there's nothing in this world that will make them ever voluntarily give that up. In recent years, though, NASA has ended, at least publicly announced, manned space missions and announced a much more stripped-down future agenda. There's going to be a completely separate development from clandestine military component of space. So on that basis alone, it's obvious, given that we do have a secret space program. Now, that doesn't have to include a connection to the UFO-ET phenomena. But there's no doubt there is a UFO-ET phenomena, and that some of it exists in Earth orbit. So you have to ask yourself, who in government knows about this? You know, members of Congress, if any of them know anything about it, we're not talking about any more than a handful, because if you want it on the front page of the New York Times tomorrow, tell a congressman today. Maybe three or four might know. Couldn't be more than that. Now, does the president know? Well, according to Dolan, he talked to a senior retired CIA officer, a very high-level man who knows on a first-name basis five or six former directors of Central Intelligence. But he asked him, how much do the presidents know? I mean, that's a legitimate question. His answer was, well, some have known more than others. Jimmy Carter was briefed. He's 99% sure Ronald Reagan was briefed. He's very confident that George Herbert Walker Bush was briefed. But in his opinion, from Clinton onward, it's less of a sure thing. These presidents have been briefed thoroughly. I know in one situation where I asked that question of a senior military general who told me that in many cases the president didn't have a high enough clearance to know this information. Now, the CIA-connected source Dolan talked to said that presidents come and go, but the bureaucrats who run the secret space program stay. And presidents are not always reliable. Some are very dedicated, others are a little more distracted. And he didn't have a lot of confidence in the ability of the presidency as an institution to manage the program. So, what do the presidents do? Well, they kiss the babies, they've got to meet and greet dignitaries. They've got all these political issues they have to deal with. The president's basically a spokesperson for the government. And it's difficult for the president to be on top of the whole mass of covert operations going on within the intelligence community. I mean, there's just absolutely no way one man could be on top of all of it. It's not possible physically or logistically. And for a president to be aware of this particular problem, well, it's better off he not be aware of it so he can do his job in the other realms of government. Given that the secret space program exists, you have to ask what would be its ultimate goal. It's a separate thing altogether from the basic neo-geopolitical maneuvering. What you'd use a secret space program for is to deal with these others. Back in 1986, when the U.S. bombed the nation of Libya, the U.S. had operationally, but still secret, the F-117A Nighthawk stealth fighter. But the stealth fighter wasn't employed in that Libyan mission. Instead, the U.S. used the F-111. Now, the F-111 is a very fine aircraft, but the fact was that the top-of-the-line aircraft was the stealth fighter, and it was not used in the Libyan mission. So you have to ask yourself, why not? Well, according to the military, the F-117 classification was still secret. And the Libyan mission, while important, wasn't seen as a high enough priority to risk exposing that aircraft yet. We didn't want the rest of the world to know because stealth technology was just that important. And that should tell you that just because we have super advanced technology, using it in such a way that it's out in the open isn't always a good thing. The technology can be so valuable it's almost counterproductive to use it, because when you're letting the rest of the world know you've got it, and the next thing you know, the spies from every country on the planet are trying to get control of that secret technology. So too with the secret space technology and the secret space program. Using flying saucers to fight the war in Afghanistan and Iraq would be counterproductive from their point of view. Assuming they want to win the war to begin with, but once you use them in battle, you're alerting other groups that it's possible and you can build a functioning flying saucer. And maybe we don't want the rest of the world to know this. Now, the capabilities of such technology would obviously be used for the highest level of classified activity that exists, and that's the ET reality. This technology would primarily be used for that in all its glory. And Dolan said he didn't know all the interactions with the terrestrial power structure might have with the ETs. But there may be interactions. And there was a discussion about the triangle ships. There's definitely a proliferation of triangle sightings. You know, the perfect triangle ships. I've seen many, many UFO reports that talk about them. And of course, as you know, there aren't supposed to be any. In the inventories of all the militaries in the world, there are no openly acknowledged perfect triangular craft. Not a single one. And we've got rumors of things like the TR-3, the Black Manta, a lot of sightings of triangles near the Boeing plant in Seattle. And, you know, very probably we're making some of these triangles. There's a crystal clear sighting of a perfect triangle craft from 1989 over the North Sea by one of the most experienced aviation experts in the world at the time. A man named Chris Gibson, who used to compete in aircraft recognition contest. They'd flash an image of the aircraft at you for a couple of seconds, and you have to identify it. And this guy saw a perfect triangle in a refueling operation with a KC-135 and a couple of F-111s accompanying it, and he was adamant. And a witness like that is very difficult to refute. So clearly, we have built some of these triangular space aircraft. And it's also true that in some encounters with triangles, there appear to be some of the same high strangeness as with more recognizably alien craft. Things like time distortion and abduction experiences with non-humans are also part of the triangle mystery. Now, we may be building some of them, but we're not building all of them by a long shot. And then we have the Cash Landrum incident, which is a famous case of a debilitating UFO encounter. In Texas, in December of 1980, two women traveling in their car saw an unusual craft in the sky, accompanied by several black, apparently military helicopters. The women sued the government unsuccessfully for funds to cover their medical expenses after they received radiation burns and had other medical complications in the wake of their sighting. Most of the good money on that case is that there is a U.S. experimental craft. Certainly the case that you got an object accompanied by lots of helicopters. It appears to be something that's ours, and it had some kind of operational trouble. It was highly radioactive. Also makes it more likely it might have been one of ours. Now, other UFO investigators always believed the object was not manufactured by the U.S., but otherwise, why would it be escorted by black helicopters? And before you say, well, you know, there are no black helicopters, I sat and watched them in Dulce landing on Archuleta Mesa. There are only a half a dozen of them, but still, black, unmarked, military, clearly military helicopters. Well, in this field, there's certain things we know and there's certain things we don't know. And we have to remember the difference. There is a genuine UFO phenomena, and this phenomena has emerged and been engaged by the U.S. military for many years. We know it's true because we've got a certain number of released U.S. documents that prove it, and lately there have been a number of incidents that have been publicly released by the military. So that proves that we have been and still are concerned about UFOs. We've tried to intercept UFOs, and we've seen them visually and tracked them on radar. All of that and more. But the rest beyond that is guesswork. And it's fair to guess. In fact, we have to guess. We have to create hypotheses. When we're creating a hypothesis, we need to distinguish that from known fact. We've got to be careful about how we handle the evidence. Now, the planet Mars certainly has played an important part in the age of flying saucers. Many of the early UFO contactees claimed they had established a variety of friendships with visitors from the Red Planet. They even wrote books that maintained they had traveled into space and visited the nearby planets. George Adamski, Howard Menger, both say they flew to Mars and were returned safely. One country boy from Arkansas who used to wear overalls when he spoke publicly even says he made friends with a big old shaggy Martian dog by the name of Bo. Now, hardly anybody believed Buck Nelson, which was his name, but he was a likable enough guy, so nobody really publicly opposed him. Some of the book titles of the genre include A Flying Saucer from Mars by Cedric Allingham, My Trip to Mars, the Moon, and Venus by Buck Nelson, which is not to neglect numerous Martian-driven comics and the Invaders from Mars chewing gum trading cards. You know, the notion of men from Mars has been burned into our souls since time immemorial. More specifically, has been with us in spades for well over a century due to writers like Edgar Rice Burroughs and H.G. Wells. We saw Hollywood explode with movies like Mars Attacks and War of the Worlds and Independence Day. But there's much more to the history of the early beliefs about life on Mars than this. There was a website called The War of the Worlds, Historical Perspective, which gave us an overview of the many phases of our belief about Mars. The Babylonians were the first to record the existence of Mars about 400 BC, calling it Nergal. Now, Nergal was the underworld personification of the sun god Utu and the god of the netherworld, bringing pestilence and war and fever and devastation. The Romans, like the Babylonians, imbued the planet with the nature of violence and death. The Romans called the planet Ares or Mars, the god of war. And he's generally portrayed in full battle attire with a crested helmet and a shield. The modern age of observation of Mars began in the 1500s when the Danish astronomer Tycho Brahe made some excellent observations of the planet that was sufficiently accurate for his student Johannes Kepler to prove in 1609 that the orbit of Mars was elliptical rather than circular. And one might note that Tycho Brahe was a unique character. Having lost a portion of his nose in a duel, he replaced it with a prosthetic one made of gold and silver. Always the topic of discussion at parties. Galileo was also studying Mars in 1609, the first time it was seen through a telescope, ushering in a new age of detailed observation. Some years later, an astronomer named Christian Huygens drew the first map of Mars. And he was first to speculate in 1698 about the existence of life on Mars. And that led to the further popularization of the idea by Sir William Herschel, the discoverer of the planet Uranus. He concluded, in spite of the thin atmosphere of Mars, the Martians probably enjoyed a situation similar to our own. And he interpreted the dark areas of Mars as seas and the light areas as land. And many other astronomers would continue to postulate the existence of life on that planet. Angelo Secchi observed Mars in 1858 and described features he called canali. And the ideas of canals stuck. And more than any other person, it was Percival Lowell, the astronomer, who would do the most to advance the cause of the canals and life on Mars. He began his observations at an observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona in 1894, and the following year published the first of three sensational books in which he argued the so-called canals represented the work of a Martian civilization or, in fact, a vast irrigation system. He declared the lines of the canals too precisely, intelligently organized and constructed to be a matter of mere chance. And in 1897, H.G. Wells wrote his immortal War of the Worlds, in which a race of Martians are losing the fight to irrigate their dying world. Around the world, many hundreds of editions of this science fiction classic have been published in just about every language on the planet. And on the silver screen, there have been several cinematic renderings. During the spiritualization or spiritualism craze of the late 1800s, mediums were not only likely to be contacting Uncle Ernie, but just as typically speaking in the tongues of a Martian. Of course, there's the case of Catherine Elisa Mueller of Geneva, who visited Mars while in a stone-cold trance state via astral travel, where she described all manner of life forms, from the most highly advanced inhabitants down to the lowest order of animal and plant life. In the 20th century, there were a number of space probes sent to Mars, first by the Soviet Union. The first successful probe was America's Mariner 4, which managed to fly by the red planet in 1965 and send back 22 images of the surface. And both the U.S.'s Mars Pathfinder, which landed on Mars in 1997, and a European probe called Mars Express continue to send back quality images of Mars. Of course, to really answer the question about whether or not there's life, there needs to be a manned mission. And while there's been one on the drawing board for quite a number of years, nothing has come of it. The possibility of life existing even now on Mars at microbiological levels great enticement to send human explorers. And who knows, they might find evidence that Mars once was home to a higher form of life. Our exploration of Mars seems impressive at this point, but it's also true that we've examined only a small part of the surface of that planet. It continues to hide many mysteries, and the existence of biological life is but one of them. And then there's the ever-popular theory that life on Mars is invisible to the human eye because the indigenous race there vibrates at a higher rate than we can see. You have to ask, did this higher race have some need for the canals and the pyramids and even cities that some believe to exist on the surface? And if they did, why did they desert them? Where did they go? Well, our research abounds with material on the secret space program and the ET-related conspiracy theories that accompany it. There are numerous blogs and sites on the internet to digest, and it takes considerable time to decipher every one of them before you decide yourself if there's anything to it. And Stephen Omar wrote a posting called UFOs and Reported Extraterrestrials on Mars. And he said the Apollo moon astronauts are often followed to the moon by UFOs. Official NASA Apollo 12 photograph, AS12-497319, clearly shows a large UFO hovering over an astronaut walking on the moon. And there are supposedly magnanimous claims of Christopher Kraft, the director of NASA tracking base in Houston during the Apollo moon missions. After leaving his NASA job, he's quoted as having revealed that the following conversation took place between Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin while on the moon. According to the discussion, those are giant things. No. This is not an optical illusion. No one's going to believe this. Then Mission Control, the Houston Center, said, What? What the hell's going on? What's wrong with you? And the astronauts responded, they're here under the surface. Mission Control asked, what's there? Astronauts, we saw some visitors. They're here for a while, observing the instruments. Mission Control demanded they repeat that last thing. And the astronauts responded, there were other spaceships that are lined up on the other side of the crater. The mission control asked him to repeat. The astronaut said, let us sound this orbital. And 625 to 5, automatic relay connected. My hands are shaking so badly, I can't do anything. Film it. God, if those damn cameras picked up anything, what then? Mission Control, have you picked up anything? Astronauts, I don't have any film at hand. Three shots of the saucers, whatever they were, that were ruining the film. Mission Control, are you on your way? Is the uproar with the UFOs over? Astronauts, they've landed there. There they are, and they're watching us. Mission Control, the mirrors, have you set them up? Astronauts, yes, they're in the right place, but whoever made those spaceships can come over here tomorrow and remove them. Now, naturally, that discussion, which has been around for, decades, we have no proof that this story's true. In fact, it's hard to accept the astronauts would have used such coarse language because in real life they go overboard to be such goody-goody two-shoes. Nor would anyone, especially our spacemen, end a conversation by using the phrase over and out. That's military parlance. I've heard it used many times on the field. But the tense exchange between the astronauts and Mission Control does seem to bear out one recurring theme of the secret space program, that UFOs have been photographed in the vicinity of U.S. astronauts on the moon, and those images have been airbrushed to hide the fact extraterrestrials are closely monitoring mankind's space programs. The moon may even be a home base for an alien civilization dating back to before humans had a recorded history. Now, the idea of life on the moon first grabbed public attention when Nikola Tesla reported his experience in transmitting radio signals to the moon and trying to get an answer, which he said actually took place. Later, American and British and French astronomers reported moving and sometimes even blinking lights during the 20s and 30s. I wrote a book called Is Someone on the Moon, where I've got 400 years of lights and structures that were seen. In the early 50s, an award-winning astronomer named John O'Neill claimed to have observed a 12-mile-long bridge on the moon that appeared to be artificially and intelligently constructed. And the bridge sighting was replicated by other witnesses before the structure was dismantled for unknown reasons. The list of astronauts who admitted they saw UFOs include Gordon Cooper, James McDivitt, who also took UFO photos while orbiting Earth. When the government tracked the flight of UFOs and radar, they often followed the course of the alien ships to the moon. Meanwhile, civilian astronomers continued to record moving and flashing and stationary lights on the moon, while U.S. and Soviet astronauts repeatedly photographed mysterious structures there. There are photos of strange spires on the moon that have been found to form perfect geometric patterns. Tall white spires that resemble the Washington Monument were photographed on the lunar surface, along with mysterious straight roads or tracks that cut through craters and hills and valleys and rock piles without a twist. Some of the domes had flashing lights, while several national photos showed long cigar-shaped objects parked on the moon that later departed in subsequent photos. Even stranger's an unconfirmed report that when Apollo 11 astronaut Buzz Aldrin opened the door of his craft after landing on the moon, he immediately saw a transparent, etheric being staring at him from outside. Now, the dark side of the moon, hidden from our eyes and telescopes on Earth, would be a logical place for an ET presence to hide its spaceports, and maybe one of the occupants had come to greet Armstrong and Aldrin on the sunny side of the planet. Could it be the moon is a foreign country and somebody else's property? That's a question that many people have asked. That the moon government doesn't want us coming up invading their territory with our nuclear weapons and pollution and military facilities would not be clearly, they want what's best for themselves and their people, so they may not want us. That may serve as one explanation for NASA's decision to stop sending astronauts to the moon in 73. The Apollo moon program had been a rousing success and had generated a lot of public publicity for NASA and been a prestigious achievement for the nation as a whole, but maybe an alien society on the moon just didn't want to share the moon with us because they knew we were just going to screw things up. Certainly a possibility. Now, in 1959, according to the story, a flying disc spacecraft, allegedly from Mars, landed in the wilderness outside of Moscow in the Soviet Union, where a secret meeting with Nikita Khrushchev was arranged. The conference regarded improving relations with Earth, exchanging knowledge, securing world interplanetary peace, but the Soviet government rejected the terms. Now, that report came from a former Army intelligence sergeant who was involved in investigating UFOs while in the Army in the 50s. Another story took place April 24, 1964, when an oval-shaped metallic flying craft landed in a farm field in Newark Valley in New York. According to farmer Gary Wilcox, who drove his tractor to the object, he kicked it to make sure it was real, after which two occupants about 4 feet tall emerged carrying a square tray full of different vegetables they'd collected from his farm. When Wilcox made comment about the fact that they were stealing his crops, they said, "Don't be alarmed, we've spoken to people before." One of the interlopers stated, "We're from what you know as the planet Mars. We can only come to Earth every 2 years." And they issued a warning for Earth people to stay out of space. Wilcox wanted a ride inside their craft, and they rejected his request. He said he gave him a bag of fertilizer and exchanged information about it and other subjects before they got back in their spacecraft and took off. His story was later investigated by the local sheriff, and he was subjected to psychiatric examination. He was found to be a normal, truthful person with no emotional problems. So if the incident's true, It certainly offers at least a working confirmation of his life on Mars, although that life would almost assuredly have to survive in the interior of the planet instead of on the Martian surface. But you got to ask yourself, how much is conjecture and how much is true? Now, living through the Cold War was a frustrating and sometimes frightening experience, as you never knew when you might see a mushroom cloud in the horizon. Khrushchev was an interesting character. He went from banging his shoe on the table at the UN, but he also had his finger on the button that would destroy the planet. There was indeed a space race of supreme order, and we thought it was our patriotic duty to set foot on the lunar surface first and before the Russians got there. And in order to do that, we might well have had to turn to one of their allies to achieve it. It's a little known fact that Yugoslavian government had solidified their own secret space program as early as 1950. According to a YouTube video called Houston, We Have a Problem, that's been downloaded 500,000 times, Yugoslavian program was the most advanced in the world and had its own astronaut team and its own rockets ready to go to the moon. According to the YouTube video, Marshal Tito, Yugoslavia's dictator, actually sold the rights to his country's space program to the U.S. for $1 billion during the time of the Kennedy administration. And this allowed us to go to the moon and back safely. Now, it's a strange, strange story, and one that needs to be investigated. But we do know that both the U.S. and the USSR military were troubled over not only the sightings of UFOs, but the landings of such craft on unsecured soil. Even the mayor of a town in Germany told to sing a craft on the ground as he traveled across the Soviet Union by train. Well, with the UFO wave of epidemic proportions, it's no wonder the Soviet Union wanted to set up shop on the moon. Maybe they could meet the extraterrestrials and maybe work out some kind of deal. Well, there was a report from the Science Digest in February 1958 issue that considered whether the Soviets might have already leapt ahead of the U.S. space program. According to the author, on the 40th anniversary of the communist seizure of Russia, they tried to shoot a rocket to the moon. Mysterious radio signals were heard from outer space that weekend, and they weren't accountable by the two Sputniks, and they soon faded away. Well, that rocket's either orbiting the sun or lost in space, but whether or not there was an attempt, the Soviets did try to send a rocket to the moon. Russia already announced they'll build special lunar cities with unique atmospheric pressure so arranged as to enable humans to survive and thrive on the moon. So they were definitely working hard to achieve that goal. And in fact, in 1958, the Army was given the job of establishing a permanent moon base to protect the planet from our enemies from space. Well, we've come to the end of another show. We'll be back tomorrow night and talk more about aliens and UFOs and all kinds of strange things. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.